so concerned about the end result. They want the end result and don't want to deal with process now. And so much of what we love in music, so much of the progression of, you know, like you listen to Pink Floyd from Umma Gumma up to Dark Side of the Moon. You listen to Hendrix from Are You Experienced to Electric Ladyland. You know, I mean, so many artists, you know, you have to live your life and it goes into your music and you progress. And what happens now is that it's sort of like, we bring the producers in, we bring the song fixers in, we bring the programmers in, and we basically remove process and we have end result. That's why it's so refreshing to hear Outkast, because there's clearly a process there, and it's kind of mysterious when I hear The Love Below, and Andre 2000 really is. He's not concerned with it as product. Of course, it is a product because people are buying it. But it's kind of like what Tom York and Radiohead are doing. You know, they really are engaged in whatever process they're engaged in, as opposed to, this is the hook, this is the hit song. Kaleidoscope is the sound of a band becoming a band again, as well as the soundtrack of what it means to be an American now. Like, it's really, a lot of it is about 9/12/01.
And I was going to go there next. Very much so. Flying. First time I heard it, and I'm sure that everybody goes through this process. First I heard it, I'm like, wow, that's a pretty song. And then I put it on, I said, got to play this. And then I put it on again, and I listened to the lyrics. And then I really, and it absolutely blew me away, because what you've done there is, and again, as a New Yorker, you brought back the whole thing for me, but you brought it back and in such a personal way that I suddenly became that guy who wanted to ask out that girl and had his last opportunity to do so in the last milliseconds of his life.
You know,
I mean, the visualization there just absolutely blew me away.
Well, thank you. It's a very, we actually played a show, a little outdoor show in the area, and playing the song, you know, I mean, just a few yards away from where it happened was very difficult. It's, in a way, it's a hard song to assimilate, because what it's saying, I mean, is difficult to visualize. You know, you're in one of the tallest buildings in the world. You've lived with the idea of what if something terrible were to happen in such a place.
But you've never believed that it was going to.
Yeah, and somebody goes in for their just their everyday life, and he decides on this day he's gonna do it. He's gonna ask her out. And on that day would be their last day together. And
it would be an interesting film.
I mean, oh yeah.
Seriously, I mean, imagine, you know, I'm sure that millions of people have thought of a film that would be that, take a scoop of the lives of Bemi. It would be a hard one for anybody to watch, needless to say.
Well, there was a great, I tell you what, there was a great TV commercial many years ago, and I think it probably influenced the writing for Flying. There was a Timex commercial, and this commercial was, I've never forgotten it. It was about a guy, he's walking up the street, and there's a voiceover, and it says, you know, Tom, and I'm paraphrasing because I don't remember the exact text, but, you know, this, you know, Tom, I'll say, was about to meet the woman that would, you know, have him, bear him 4 children, you know, he would become a successful politician and completely change his life. But Tom decided to buy a cheap watch and not a Timex. And you see, like, these two people, and they literally miss one another. They would have bumped into one another, but they miss one another. Mm-hmm. And that is every day of.
Isn't that the way it works, though?
That is completely the way it works.
Everything's about circumstance.
And so much of, you know, like, there were so many people in that building, highly educated, dedicated people, very wealthy people, and their lives were torn from them. Was an incredibly arrogant act, and I think about that. I think about how we can do this to ourselves more than I think about Muslim fundamentalists. Or, you know, we're all on planet Earth. We're all human beings on this planet. And so anyway, I feel really good about the song and the way the band recorded it. And Corey just is the everyman in that, in the way he delivers the lyric. And there's something just, you know, very, very powerful there. And, you know, songs have a life of their own. Like, I wrote the lyric and you know, I wrote the song, but the song has, you know, I don't really take any credit for it, you know, because it's an idea that assaults me. I look at it, I think about it. I don't even think that I, you know, it's weird to think that I even did any, had anything to do with it. I feel like I had very little to do with it. And the band has much to do with it, how it became what it became. But it's like an idea that's in the world now.
So on a happier note, I'm just going to ask you a couple more things. But on a happier note, Back in Black.
Oh yeah.
I mean, you don't you really. I think it, and I say this because I play AC/DC in the mix of stuff, and I still do to this day because all this stuff's been, you know, remastered recently. But so I think it kind of, it's hard to say. It doesn't really rock harder than the original, but you definitely have taken it. And I mean, you didn't think you could amp up an AC/DC song, and you've amped up an AC/DC song.
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny because we always loved it. And, you know, the Back in Black is very much like, there are these songs like Walk This Way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Walk This Way was a song that in the early days of the whole DJ culture and DJ spinning at parties, Walk This Way was a staple. Like, the DJs were platform agnostic. If they heard something that sounded funky, it was going to go into their mix. And so Walk This Way was like that, and Back in Black was the, like, one of the other songs that had that kind of thing, you know, where they would mix in that first eight bars of that riff was part of it. So in a weird way, in an unintended way, you know, like Back in Black is part of the culture of hip hop, you know, as much as it's part of the rock and roll culture. So,
yeah, very cool. And the Beatles.
Oh yeah.
I mean, I think what you've done here very slyly. To people, people are going to get to discover, because they're going to hear it, but you've done such take on the songs that people are suddenly going to be sitting there and saying, now, wait a minute, I'm listening to Living Color, but I'm all, wait a minute.
Oh, yeah.
So what? it becomes an really interactive experience, and I don't mean that in the internet sort of.
Well, you know, the other thing, too, is that the cover songs really are part of the kaleidoscope experience in the sense that the song A Question of When is really about, like, this kind of completely unfocused terror that people are living in, you know, who will be next, when will the next attack be, you know what I mean, in the big cities, how can we protect ourselves, get the duct tape and the plastic sheet, you know, how do we do it? And Tomorrow Never Knows says, you know what? It's you know, all of that, don't be afraid.
Exactly.
It really says, it's not really calling on us to be passive. It's calling on us to be really engaged in our lives and not to be afraid. As a kind of very surreal, Dada-esque experience, you know. It's an invented thing. It has nothing to do with who we are. And everyone is so invested in it, white people and black people, and not just white and black, but, you know, everyone is invested in their identity and the whole identity politics and identity this and identity that. And, you know, we hold on to these quote-unquote truths, but are they true? Is the black man thing? Yeah, that's real, but is that real? Like, I started thinking about slavery in the Middle Passage, and I was thinking, you know, slavery was incredibly bad for white people. It's incredibly bad for white people because white folks were able to live a delusion of superiority in slavery.
When they weren't in any way, shape, or form.
You know, just as inferiority for the African diasporic people is a delusion, superiority is also a delusion. And I've started to feel, you know, a kind of a pity in a way for what happened to so many people in the South, because they live with their hatreds, which eat at them, eat them alive. And they have no idea, you know, the richness that could be afforded to them if they gave that up. There's a much richer life for them walking away from hatreds of that kind. And everyone that's invested in that, you know, black people who are victims and feel justified in, you know, in always and forever putting white people, whoever they meet, put their feet in the fire because of what happened, you know? It's kind of like, you know what? If you dealt with history as history, these things happened. They did. How can we be better than we've been? But to be so invested in these kind of faux...
He's crapping out and I don't know why. I'm going to do it one more time. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Ready?
Yep.
Hello, this is Vernon from Living Color. Now that we met Dennis the Menace, we can tell you ain't no glamour boy, but at least his radio show isn't part of Operation Mind Control. Hey, Dennis, do you always write these damn things using album and song titles? Surely you could come up with...
Okay, we'll do it one more time, and I'll probably play the outtake.
Yeah, okay. Hello, this is Vernon Reed from Living Color. Now that we met Dennis the Menace, we can tell you ain't no glamour boy, but at least his radio show isn't part of Operation Mind Control. Hey, Dennis, do you always write these things using album and song titles? Surely you could come up with something more vivid than that?